Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to this week's episode of Calcio e Cappuccino. We have myself, Christine Cupo, as always, Dre Cordero, Aaron West, and we have Matteo Bonetti with us this week. We are going to be hitting, of course, all of the topical items with World Cup, Serie A's reach. We've got 17 of the 20 Serie A teams represented. We also have Manager of the Month to detail, as well as Player of the Month for Serie A. As well as the semi-spicy topic of Serie A league reform proposals that have come through. We are going to dive right in. Where do you want to start, Dre?
I can't tell you how much I appreciate that you gave my name, Dre, a little bit of an Italian twang when you said it's like a today. Like a today, Cordero. I think it lends me an air of authenticity, and I might start doing that when I call Serie A games just so people, just to bamboozle people into thinking that I'm
uno di noi, Dre, uno di noi.
What's good? There's a World Cup coming up in like 3 days, I think, at the time of recording. It's a pretty big sporting event from all things I hear, even though advertising spending is down. There's all sorts of logistical nightmares. I'm less excited. And I know this is the worst. Like, our producers are like yelling at me for starting this way, but I don't remember being this less enthusiastic in 3 days from the start of a World Cup than I am today. And to, like, I'm not pretending. Like, so once the actual thing starts, I'm going to go nuts. I'm going to watch a ton of it. Football takes over. I love the game. I can't help myself. But today, with none of it in front of me, I'm not as pumped up as I normally am for the World Cup.
Hey, you are becoming Italian, Dre, you see.
Look at that. I think you're not alone in that, Dre. I think this World Cup in particular, I think it's fair to say that many of us are conflicted. And I am still in utter and total shock, disbelief a bit, that it's 3 days away. I'm going to have an interesting Thanksgiving in front of the TV, I guess. And it won't
smack
be
in the middle of November,
football, right? Yeah.
Smack in the middle of November, competing for American audiences, not that I care about, you know, other sports, but for American audiences, competing with the NFL, competing with the NBA, obviously the human rights abuses, the you know, just tons of controversies surrounding the organization, the allotment. But you know what? Let's talk about the stuff that matters.
Yeah.
The football, as opposed to the big picture things.
So we have 17 Serie A teams spread across the competing nations in this grand World Cup, which is quite a lot. That's 67 Serie A players, as well as 3 Serie B. I think we wanted to talk a bit about who we think have the greatest shot at potentially hoisting that World Cup at the end of this.
Juve.
And then hightailing. Juve do have 11 players represented, but do you think it would be like, say, like Juve France, Juve Argentina, Juve Poland? We've got a lot of wiggle room here.
It's wild. We're going to talk, and actually, I'd love to hear from Matteo about this. We're going to talk about Manager of the Month honors going to Max Allegri, and the Player of the Month honors going to Rafael Leao. But with Juventus, it's been the absolute best month possible, right? When you consider just how good they've been in Serie A, six consecutive victories to get themselves not just back into the top four, but on the Serie A podium, you know, within striking distance of second place Milan. And now they go into a World Cup where, yes, I know that most Juve fans probably want to wrap their players in bubble wrap for the World Cup so that they all can come back healthy and they could, you know, pick up this momentum when the league restarts in January. But the top three favorites at the World Cup all feature Juventus players. And two of the three, the top two, pretty prominently, because you expect for Brazil that Danilo, Bremer, and Alexandro will be starters. Just essentially, three quarters of the five-time world champion, number one favorite for the World Cup is the Juventus defense. Argentina have Leandro Paredes and Angel Di Maria, who should play pretty prominent roles. And then with France, you have Adrien Rabiot, maybe more of a Milan side with Olivier Giroud and Theo Hernandez. But Rabiot, a player who was, I mean, they tried to push him out of Turin. And if they could have sold him, they would have, right? And they weren't able to. And he's had his own redemption because he's been valuable for Juve. And he's still a good enough midfielder to make the World Cup defending champion France squad.
Dre, I would add to that that I think that Juventus, like, there's a little bit separation, right? Because I think Juventus, the company, wanted to sell Rabiot. But I still feel like Allegri loved him. And I think that definitely helped for him in his mind to feel valued. Because if it was the coach that was trying to push him out, I think we'd see a very different Rabiot than the one that we see now. Just like that little distinction, you know?
Is it Rabiot really, one of those players that – sorry, Aaron. He's one of those players that the coaches seem to love a lot more than the fan base, right? And even he still gets considerable minutes with the French national team, which is pretty damn stacked. He gets obviously considerable minutes with Juventus. He's just one of those players that it feels like for whatever reason, whatever they're seeing behind the scenes, he hasn't been the most popular player amongst Juventus fans. And I totally agree because he has been quite inconsistent throughout his tenure. He definitely is not at the level of a 7 million euro net per season wage would indicate to me. That's a wage that's normally reserved for a player that's world class. But going back to your earlier point, Dre, just to summarize that Coach of the Month award for Allegri, it's like his magnum opus the last month. Six consecutive wins without conceding a single goal. You're seeing a little bit of Corto Muso sprinkled in, but you're actually seeing good football too. Great football, as a matter of fact, against Inter in the second
half. Matteo, hold that thought because I can tell you're fired up to talk about it, and we're going to do a whole thing on Allegri and Juve and the manager of the month.
Oh, we haven't gotten to that thing yet? We're still introducing things? Okay.
No, we're 3 days from the World Cup. We're like already like halfway through our World Cup segment.
I don't care about the World Cup. I don't want to speak about the World Cup. I have no interest in the World Cup whatsoever. Italy's not there. I don't care about a November tournament. I'm going to let you guys go off on that.
Bring me back. You guys going to fight or what?
My man just ingested four espresso shots in a row and came in fired up. My goodness.
I'm going on mute. Tell me when it's time to talk about Allegri. You guys talk about this November World Cup. I don't care.
You don't want to talk about any of those players at the World Cup?
All right, come on. I can talk about the World Cup.
There's only 66.
There's a little bit of Serbia.
There's only 66 players from the league that you cover on a week in, week out basis that you can talk about. But no, you want to just leave it to Allegri.
Go on to you, Matteo.
That's what Allegri's done to me. You know, I'm all in. I'm buying back in. I'm right with him. I'm his dance partner on Dancing with the Stars, the Coldplay song. I'm right there.
Honestly,
with him.
I don't believe that part because I have yet to see anyone on this entire Serie A team that can actually dance. I would love to see it.
Did you watch our show the last week or what?
Yes, I was. I'm speechless, quite frankly, from the display that I've seen.
It was that game, right?
Like,
speechless.
Uh huh. I mean, like you chicken winging with Tammy.
I'm gonna hop in and say it's only because I'm gonna say it's because I haven't featured on many shows that you included me in that, but because that's a affront to my personality to say I can't dance.
We'll talk. We got to see actions, bro.
Listen, I have on a personal level, not on air, have seen Aaron dance, and I would say that he and I are the only ones here that can dance. I am quite shocked. We need to see if Dre can dance, though.
Aaron,
I would put money down on betting that Dre can dance.
I'm gonna stay completely silent.
Real money on this.
Is there anything
breakdance with haven't you breakdanced with someone famous? I know you rapped with Pitbull. Like,
yeah. No, but I did feature prominently in like the battles down in Miami when we were having them at like the skating rink. It was the days when you went to the skating rink, but you didn't have any skates and you weren't interested in renting them. You just knew that little area in the center that was closed off was where the b-boy battles would take place, and whole crews would show up. It sounded like the mid to late 80s, but it was like the late 90s, early 2000s, and it's the best. I think it was basically
there's definitely grainy camcorder footage out there somewhere of Dre just really putting it down, and
without question.
So now my new conclusion is that they've made all of the people that absolutely cannot dance. Though I appreciate your efforts.
That's the best way to do it for TV, if we're gonna be honest.
Yes.
Nobody wants to see that. They want to see people who are bad at dancing dance or like incredible at it.
That can definitely dance are that Argentina squad, who I know many people are riding for, if not for Messi, then perhaps for some of our other Serie A counterparts. So what do we think the chances are that we're going to see a very happy Dybala at the end of this tournament? Perhaps Angel Di Maria. So we really think they've got the fight in them to get this done.
Yes, 100%. I'm big on Argentina. I love the balance of their team. You know, obviously, I would love if USA could win, but after them, realistically, Argentina is the team that I'm personally going for. You know, I love the storylines within the team. I love the Italian players, the Serie A players that we have within the squad. They're all unbelievable. Lautaro Martinez has always played his part. De Paul, you know, we remember him from his Udinese days. He was unbelievable, one of my favorite players. I think they got just like a mix of everything, and it just feels like it's lined up to be a perfect World Cup for Messi and for the entire Argentina side. And when I was looking at all the rosters, I know some people question their midfield, but I don't. I love it, and I really, really, really think that they're going to win it all.
Marco, did I hear this right, that you're an Italian that's rooting for Argentina? Let me just make sure that I heard that correctly.
Yeah. Okay, Matteo, if you have to choose somebody to win, there's a lot of Italian ancestry in Argentina. So if you got to get somebody to win after USA, of course, then I'm going to go for Argentina. If we're talking about realistic.
I'm not rooting for people based on them having a great-grandfather that's Italian. That's not how it works. Argentina's a bitter rival to Italy, Marco. What are you talking about?
Italy's not in it. You can't be a rival if you're
I don't care. Then go for the
who are you picking?
You have a
Mateo,
citizenship
who are you
that you live
picking?
In. That's giving you all these opportunities.
All I'm hearing is hate. Who are
He's
you picking?
He's going for England. That's why.
I'm picking – I actually think Brazil is the most stacked team. We have to make
Brazil and Italy are
I'm not saying I'm rooting for them, though. I'm saying that I think they're the best team. There's no way I'm ever going to root for Brazil. You guys are out of your minds. I'm going for Brazil all the way. I've got my Brendan Aaronson shirt. I can't wait to chant.
I thought you were going
to
be on
Walker
for this
Zimmerman.
Segment. What happened
I'm going
to
go down the streets in Connecticut chanting at the top of my lungs Walker Zimmerman's name. That's how pumped I am for the USA.
Wow.
I can tell
that winter has come to Simsbury, Connecticut, because Mateo is livid. Like, Mateo has not been this angry since last winter.
This man hasn't seen the sun in 5 days and is absolutely in withdrawal.
Come on!
Hey, man, is everything okay? Are you good? I'm going to text you on the side. Are you good?
I've got the Star Spangled Banner inside of me right now, man. That's what's happening.
Mateo, I just want to tell you that I've missed you on here a lot. I do.
On spare cards.
A lot. I mean, I'm not speaking for everybody, but
I feel like after the weekend when I did the gritty on national television, I feel like it's unlocked a new side of me that I can't seem to put away now. You know, it's come out. It's a new version.
So
Aaron, what did you think about that gritty, by the way? 1 to 10.
4.
That's actually not bad. That's not bad.
Not
like
bad.
A 4 from you?
Bottom half of the table.
I mean, that was nice of him, I think. 4 is generous.
4 seems a good friend number.
4 is very diplomatic, yeah. Well then, so this has been a very productive coverage of World Cup upcoming. Dre, what do you want to hit next? Since we're obviously just all over the place. We're going off the rails.
That's a good place. It's a good place to leave our very reluctant World Cup talk ahead of, you know, 3 days from the kickoff of the tournament, which I'm on the same page. What I actually wanted to talk about today was the it's going to sound boring, but I promise you it's not, was the Serie A assembly where the presidents, the administrators of the league and the clubs met to discuss what changes they want to see happen, right? And so the Serie A president, the current Serie A president, Lorenzo Cassini, announced a reform commission that expects to have some proposals to present to the FIGC by mid-December. Among those proposals, something that's somewhat evergreen when it comes to Serie A, and that is contraction, reducing the number of teams in Serie A from 20 to 18. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but Serie A's best years were in an 18-team league. Now, that doesn't mean that it was as a result of having 18 teams. But when you think about the period from the late 80s, from the 88-89 season to 03-04, which was the last season with 18 clubs, 16 seasons in total, a decade and a half. Those were the glory years of the modern Serie A. Those were the years in which Serie A had five Champions League winners, albeit Milan were four of them, Juve the other. Those are the years in which there were nine Ballon d'Or winners in Serie A. Van Basten won it twice. Lothar Matthäus, Baggio, Weah, Ronaldo, Zidane, Nedved, Shevchenko. These were what we think about when we think about the golden years of Serie A. It was a league that had 18 teams in it. It had no weak teams in it. It had no teams that were essentially out of their depth from the moment they were promoted. It had very few of any teams that you saw at the beginning of the season. They're going down. They're going to be relegated. And quite the opposite. It was a period in time in which some good teams, you know, a good Fiorentina team with Batistuta, a really good Inter side that won the UEFA Cup, were battling not to get relegated. In the Viola's case, they did drop, despite having players like Brian Laudrup, like Dunga, like the aforementioned Batigol. In Inter's case, they saved themselves by a single point, same year in which they won a European trophy. And so there is something to be said. We can maybe get into some of the reasons for less being more with Serie A.
The great idea, whoever it is that proposed that. I'm looking right now at the Serie A table. I'm counting five teams that have a Serie B level roster. And a few others, by the way, that have virtually no fans. I mean, Sassuolo can't even fill half their stadium with Sassuolo fans. They have no appeal outside of the very small town of Sassuolo. You can make the case for a few other teams, but right now I'm counting Verona, Cremonese, Spezia, Lecce, Empoli. Maybe you can make a case for Salernitana, even though they've strengthened. Those are teams that I think have Serie B level rosters. There's too many teams that have absolutely no appeal outside of their own small towns. So by reducing to 18 teams, you're increasing the overall quality of the league. You're increasing the amount of bad games that we get at the bottom of the table that have pretty much no interest outside of their small towns. So I think it'll make it more competitive. If you relegate teams 18, 17, and 16, maybe even do a play out where you only relegate the last two and then do a play out between 16 with the third in Serie B, just to maybe give whoever finishes in 16th place more of a chance to stay up. That's what Ligue 1 does, and it seems to work quite well. I think the Bundesliga is doing that as well. Actually, they are doing that for sure. So that's two of the top five European leagues. Or you could do a play out with teams that are in Serie A and maybe stretch it from 14, 15, and 16. That way you have more teams actually fighting for something at the end of the season and not so many gray area games that are basically glorified friendlies in the last month or month and a half of the season. So I'm all for that.
Wow. And extremely enthusiastic, let's go from Matteo. Marco, what do you think about the reduction in teams? And obviously, there's a few other benefits and, of course, negatives that would go with this happening. One of the key reasons that people are looking at this potential is to actually increase projected future income, tax reasons, broadcast money, et cetera. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm completely agree with Matteo. I've wanted this for a while. 18 teams, I even will make a joke saying 16 teams I could go down to because I could cut down the roster a lot. And I feel like a lot of the teams at the bottom, they don't create much. Like, they kind of know that they're going down and they're just like fighting to survive. And yes, I know people will say like, all right, you lose the magic of like what Salernitana did last year. But I still think that you'll get that no matter what.
Arguably, Sassuolo, who were the giant slayer in many instances. Granted, they're not that same team this season, but prior season, sure.
Yeah, I don't know. The only thing that I would say is like this kind of reminds me, every time I see this come out in the newspaper, I take of it just like when they say that they're going to redo the San Siro and they're going to build a new stadium. I never believe it because I just think that it's too hard to ever pass. You know, I hope that I will be wrong, but it's kind of like I'm waiting until I actually see it to get excited for it.
Whew. Aaron, where are you hitting on this?
Yeah, I think it makes sense to reduce it. The original idea of increasing the number of teams was to increase money. But if the product is poor because of that increased number of teams, people stop watching. It doesn't look good when you see on TV a 20th place team whose own fans don't even come to the matches because they know they're not going to win. I think the increased competition really, really benefits the league. I think Bundesliga has benefited from it. I think it would really help Serie A in general. I think it makes sense. I don't know if it'll ever get passed because of the requirements for what it would take to pass it. But
to be clear, for anybody that isn't up to speed on this yet, it's that it requires a vote from the majority. So it has been
probably not going to get passed because they will vote against. I don't know if it's necessarily in some of their own interests their own interests, because some of these teams wouldn't be in Serie A if they voted against it. So it makes sense that they wouldn't vote for it. But in the sense, in the discussion, I am all for it. I think it just makes overall, it makes fiscal sense. It makes sense for the optics of the league, the quality of the league. Everything Dre said about the historical precedent really, really rings true for me. Bundesliga used to have 16 teams. I know Marco was joking about that, but they expanded from 16 to 18. I think then went to 20, then back to 18. I'm not exactly sure, but they used to have 16. It just makes the pool stronger. Like Matteo was 100% correct. There are a few teams in Serie A that have Serie B rosters. And when you cut it down to 18, it just is not a possibility. The pool of talent gets stronger from there. So I'm for it. That's my long-winded way of saying that. Yes.
Also, it may be sort of just too narrow-sighted to say, hey, look at the table as it is right now. We're only 15 games into Serie A, but it's a perfect example, at least the snapshot of what we're talking about, is that obviously everyone knows bottom three are relegated, 18, 19, and 20 go down to Serie B. Currently, the gap between 17, Spezia safe, and Cremonese, 18th relegated, is the same as the gap between 10th and 17th on the table. That tells you the table is long by about three or four teams, right? Or maybe by exactly three teams. If you chop two of those off, you have a more compelling league. And by the way, two of those teams are teams with some history. Like Verona is a past Scudetto winner. Sampdoria is an iconic and classic team that constantly, you know, produce, aside from really good talent, some of the most iconic kits in the history of the Serie A. So you still have what you don't have right now is a compelling relegation fight, because there's a 6-point gap between 17 and 18, which is exactly the same as the gap between Fiorentina in 10th and Spezia in 17th.
So are you casting your ballot for pro, Dre?
I don't believe that it'll get done. I know that the four previous presidents,
if we were entrusted in this Cappuccino court of law, cast our ballots, you're going pro.
If I'm the Serie A dictator, I absolutely chop off two teams, and it's the last two. I don't do it as angrily as Matteo did earlier, but I let them down gently and
so
shift it down to Serie B.
What is it that squad? They need 50% to say yes, or like 51%? How does it work? What's the majority?
I don't think it's a simple majority, but I don't have the exact number. Marco might know better.
Yeah, I honestly, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I believe it was like 14 or 15. So it's way more than the majority. And if you create a group of like six, then ain't nothing getting done. That's kind of the problem.
Oh, that's
you can understand. No, and you can understand also why they decided to expand, right? Like the expansion came in the early aughts, 2004-05 was the first season. You had the rise of TV money coming in. They saw themselves slipping behind the likes of, you know, the Premier League and La Liga. They figured more games means more TV money, more revenue. But that was sort of short-sighted, because you saw the product sort of devalued as a result of that. You saw that the TV contracts that were negotiated every 3 years would be worth less and less money the more watered down the games became, the more that teams were just splashing out money on transfers and on salaries without investing in their infrastructure. Napoli are great now, and the Maradona Stadium is absolutely packed right now. But when Napoli are not competing in the top four, that stadium is absolutely empty. And a team like Napoli would benefit from having a smaller, more modern stadium. There's all sorts of impediments to building new stadiums, as we know with, for example, Inter and Milan wanting to build a new San Siro and all the things that are standing in the way of that, as Marco alluded to. But clearly, there was a decent idea that to have more games would mean more money, but it, we've now had, you know, several seasons of evidence to the contrary of that, and it's actually devalued and watered down the product.
Right.
At the bottom half. At the bottom half.
Yeah, chasing the cash, which I would argue that the reduction now would also be the same line of decision making. You're like, yes, it may be good for a very brief period of time. Maybe it would last a bit longer. It's hard to say, but they're essentially still chasing tax incentives and future projected revenues. I think, yes, there obviously is compelling evidence to suggest that, you know, if you alleviate some of the weaker squads, it would be a benefit. But if the end goal is essentially just to grow the league and the, excuse me, I have a frog in my throat. If essentially all you're trying to do is
you're
grow
adopting
the league,
frogs now, oh my God.
Yeah, squirrels, frogs. I am urban Cinderella at this point, or Snow White, either one, whatever. But I think if you look at everything within the lens of which seems to be the larger fan base of everything in comparison to Premier League, it's more than just having compelling matches. It's that now Serie A is running catch up in a number of departments, including marketing, to establish growth, where Premier League had essentially got out the gate early and established dominance, yielding a far wider global fan base, which is what Serie A is after now. So I think it's pulling a bunch more levers than just simply increasing quality of product and viewership.
All right, sorry to go back, but I'm just, you know, I got Gazzetta open and I always just like read some of the headlines and I see this title that says 35% of Italians that read Gazzetta voted that they want Argentina to win the World Cup, while 6% went for Brazil. Sorry, I had to bring that up one more time.
So you're coming for Matteo right now?
Yeah, yeah. Matteo was part of that 6%.
So let's transition to something Matteo was very passionate about earlier, and that is Max Allegri winning the Manager of the Month honors after Juve ran off 6 consecutive victories to get themselves back into top 4 contention, top 3 at the moment, chasing down second place Milan. And so often fans are prisoners of the moment, and you could not find a voice to defend Max Allegri a month ago. Now he's Manager of the Month. Now Juve are competitive again. Is anybody saying sorry? Are there hashtag Allegri in trending on Twitter?
I don't know that we've seen that yet, but I think that we've seen a lot of "we're back" from the Juventus community, quite frankly. Which, you know what? It's good to have that optimism, especially going into this brief pause. But to take Juve from 8th to 3rd in roughly 4 weeks, 3 impactful matches in November, Verona, followed by the Derby d'Italia and then Lazio, which were actually really impressive that Matteo had alluded to. Goals coming in from Rabiot and Nicky Beans for the Derby d'Italia, and then Moise Keane busting out a brace against Lazio. I think that for me, with Allegri, the thing that this all demonstrated is like there currently, or at least there doesn't seem to be any love lost between he and the squad. I don't know. Anybody else?
Yeah. Yes. Plenty of thoughts here. I think that the only thing that kept Allegri in a job, honestly, is his wage. So I think that he has that to thank, is that he was simply too expensive to fire. He's making something of 9 million euro net a season. So to sack him now would mean paying him this season and 2 more seasons, or 3 more seasons after this one. So it was just too much of a financial sacrifice to do that. So I think that's why they were forced into being so lenient on him.
Who would they replace him with, Matteo? If it wasn't the money, if they could afford to fire him, who would they have brought in at that point of the season to replace him?
Oh, wow. Didn't really think about that part yet.
Just bring me the other guy. Give me. It doesn't matter if the other guy's any good. It doesn't matter if the other guy is fictional. Okay. Nobody knows who the other guy is. Okay. Just bring me the other guy.
I would have gone with the Zerbi and gotten him before Brighton got him. Although
and you saw in the back of Sarri and Pirlo, you would have seen Agnelli going with De Zerbi?
Yes, because the big difference is that Sarri alienated the locker room and, more importantly, the leaders in the locker room. And I've heard this from someone who was in that locker room too.
100%. But weren't you making the point that after being convinced on, you know, sexier football, right? Because they'd won 9 consecutive Scudetti with the combination of Allegri and Conte, that they had, you know, Agnelli had been convinced to, hey, we're going to win anyway, let's at least win pretty. So they try Sarri, they win, they don't like it, he alienates everybody, they leave. They try Andrea Pirlo, who has his own sort of, you know, romantic ideas, which align with mine, about how football ought to be played. They don't win the Scudetto, they fire him. And so they go to, hey, let's go back to the pragmatism that got us success in the past. You really genuinely saw Agnelli then going, no, never mind, let's go and play the Zerbi-style football after Agnelli flopped?
Well, Sarri won a Scudetto. He just didn't get along with people behind the scenes. I think that if Sarri actually got along with players and didn't alienate the likes of Chiellini and Ronaldo and players like that, then he probably would have stuck around. I don't think he left because of his style. He left because
that wasn't
my question. Wasn't a fit.
That was my question.
I'm saying that it wasn't the football style as much as it was the actual person. So I don't think they got rid of that style. They just got rid of someone who wasn't getting along with the players. So it's not like
who did they replace him with?
Someone who was already embedded inside Juventus, who was Italian, which is a big thing, and who had no
style
as a manager.
Style had nothing to do with it.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
In defense of Matteo, I think the argument here is actually it's not outside the realm of possibility for Juve to have sacked Allegri with no plan, given what they've historically done more recently. However, in an attempt to not recreate the errors of recent seasons past, not in their best interest. So, yeah, I mean, they could have without the prohibitive barrier of having to pay out a ton of cash. And recreating the we're paying Allegri and Sarri and then finishing paying off Allegri and then swapping that over to whatever we can pay Pirlo. Yeah, I think Juve have made a series of bad decisions, which hopefully they steer out of. But I obviously it's financials that kept Allegri in this job. It's complete and total serendipity, I say, perhaps.
So my point
strategy that Allegri managed to pull this off.
My point, Kupo, is that it wasn't just the finances. It wasn't just
that
cost what it cost. It was that Agnelli wanted his guy and wanted to go back to the things that made Juventus successful, the things that were considered part of Juve's DNA. We have the benefit of seeing the last month of the season, of seeing the 6-game win streak, of seeing Juventus recover that DNA, of being the best defensive side in Serie A. And I think the idea that after being convinced to go more, you know, progressive, attack-minded, romantic, whatever you like, with two different managers, they switch over to, okay, we'll get a Allegri ball. That then, after 8 games, 9 games, 10 games, whatever, no, never mind, let's go back to the romanticism. I don't see that as maybe what I would have wanted, maybe what Matteo would have wanted. I don't see that as a real, legitimate path for Agnelli and the Juventus brass.
Oh, you asked me what I would have done, not what I Juventus would have done.
I don't think Juventus would have slowed you down so I could explain to you what I meant, and you were there with somebody in the locker room, and you had no interest in me clarifying.
But go ahead. Get the boxing gloves again.
I have 2 points. Number one, I would pay a lot of money just to see Dre grill Matteo like that again. number two, I think part of the issue with the idea of sacking the large issue of with the idea of sacking Allegri is that not only was there the material impact of how much he would cost them in the bank account, it was the impact of what sacking Allegri meant, which is what I think Dre was getting at, is that it would be after these, we've tried these ideological hires with Pirlo, with Sarri. We go back to our guy who Agnelli believes is his guy, who he like kind of sets his stock by. And if we still fail, if I call this a failure and I'm getting taxed this heavily, this is admitting to the biggest failure possible.
For sure.
I think for Agnelli's own pride, he had to let this ride out and not take a massive hit to his checkbook.
And this is the best possible
situation that could have worked out for him.
Yeah, it's in my opinion that Juve went back to Allegri because they see him as a stabilizer, and they knew what to expect with him. He's not erratic. However, what they ended up getting was not the Allegri that they had in the past. And I think that that is where the money issue came in to help him stay afloat for longer than maybe he could have. Now, also, just want to address that I don't agree that Pirlo was an ideological hire. Pirlo was snatched after 3 weeks of being appointed to the kids, and that was a Band-Aid off of an impetuous decision to sack Sarri. So that was a fix. That was probably one of the most atypical decisions Juve have done possibly ever in terms of business management, in my opinion. But yeah, that was definitely fixing an error in the short term, not the long term. I think that eventually there needs to be a discussion had in terms of like, what does Juve look like again as a squad in spirit on pitch, and how are we moving forward, and establish somebody that's not Allegri. But I don't think that that will be right now.
I think with the clarity of being 15 games into the season, not quite halfway, but you know, almost just a few games shy of reaching the midpoint of the season, you look at Napoli, they've been healthy. Napoli have not had the mass injuries that Milan have had, for example, and certainly not the mass injuries that Juve have had, and in a sense had right up until the last maybe couple of weeks of the season with the most recent weeks with Federico Chiesa coming back, with Di Maria coming back. The difference between Milan and Juventus right now is 2 points. The gap with Napoli is significantly higher. And I don't think they just got a different Allegri necessarily. They got a different Allegri, maybe, although I'm not buying it completely, and they got a slew of debilitating injuries that did not allow them to compete at the level. Because in a sense, I think even Juve's injury crisis was worse than Milan's, because of where those injuries happened, because of not having a trequartista available, not having a player to get the ball to Milik or Vlahovic, not having a sort of creative midfielder that can create, you know, build chances for the attackers that they did have. And so, yes, they lean on the defense. They would normally do that anyway. Yes, Allegri can be mocked for his ultra-conservative approach, but I think even more than Milan, it was where the injuries happened for Juve that made it so catastrophic for them. And the moment they started to get healthy in key positions, they started to win again.
Yeah, the misfortune of plunking down cash for Pogba and then never actually getting to use Pogba among the others was just kind of damning. Although it was really exciting in the initial bit of the season where we thought that Juve were going to bring something magical together, which, hey, maybe they'll still manage to pull something off, but this lull was certainly deflating.
Marco is being suspiciously quiet about Massimiliano Allegri.
No, listen.
Are you okay?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I wanted to let you guys rant out. I saw there's a lot of built up anger from the crew on that one. So I sat it out. It's nice to be on the audience side for once. No, for me, I mean, I'm not going to go back about the coaches, when he was fired, if he would have been fired, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's brought back the idea of let's make sure we don't concede first. That's really the idea of this Juventus. It's play conservative, tuck down, close the space, and hit on the counterattack. And I think that they've shown, ever since the Milan game, it's kind of been a spark within the team. And I think they got the team spirit back, because that was the biggest thing that was lacking. You know, they tried the same route, but there wasn't that same feeling around the rest of the team. You see the huddles that they do. You see the way that key players have stepped up. That comes from the locker room saying, hey, guys, let's pull this together. And I think that is credit to Allegri. And, you know, the only thing that I will say is, like, it's still way too early to judge. It was too early to judge either way, right? Because, yes, Juventus have done really well in these last few games. My fear within this team and the vulnerabilities that I see if we talk about how they're going to challenge for a title is, how do they cope when things don't go their way? And what I mean by that is, against Inter, they didn't concede, right, to the two big chances that Inter had. against Lazio, they didn't put them under real threat. So Juventus were able to score first. And when they score first, they're able to manage out a game a lot better. The opposition will push forward. They'll drop in. They could hit on the counter again. My thing is, when they will concede first, and when they play against a team like Napoli, for example, who is really always finding those spaces, can they? Do they have that plan B? Do they have the ability to pivot? So that's why I'm still hesitant to say, let's see where this team can actually go, because they haven't shown that. Napoli, on the other hand, of course, they have shown that. They've shown that when they go down, when it's a physical match, when they're not able to find space, they're able to win in multiple ways. So that's sort of where my head is at with this team.
I think that as it stands, though, this first half of the season, Napoli have had more depth to play with, and certainly even their strikers in terms of versatility. Granted, they're not one-to-one replacements for each other, but it's something that Juve haven't had the wealth of options to do that. So I guess we'll see, coming back from World Cup in January, what the state of Juventus actually looks like, if in fact they have all the healthy players that, I mean, I'm sure everyone hopes for.
I'm glad you said World Cup, because that's where I want to bring it back. So we can close out on this. And that is, Allegri winning.
You will not stop going at Matteo, will you? My goodness.
he came at me, man. You know, I got a fire barge back. Rafael Leão is the player of the month, the most recent player of the month recipient, after almost a clean sweep by Napoli players, deservedly so, the first couple of months of the season. The Allegri manager of the month discussion was lively. This is where I would like to take it with Leão. It's last season with Rafael Leão was his breakout campaign in Serie A. Here's a player who had a ton of talent. We heard the coaches that he had at Sporting talk about him being the most talented player to go through there since Cristiano Ronaldo. We've heard just all these wonderful things about the player that Leão was, but he needed to show it consistently. He did it last year to the tune of the MVP honor and helping Milan win a first Scudetto in just over a decade. Now he's going into the World Cup as a legitimate star, maybe the biggest star in Serie A, even including someone like Kvaratskhelia, who's done it for 15 rounds, now has all of last season plus a pretty productive year so far in Serie A. And so what is the expectation? Where is the bar set for Leão going into this World Cup on a good Portugal team that's not necessarily among the favorites but has talent around them, for a player who at the start of last season was not even on the Portugal team, to a player that now you would think, especially with some of the injuries that have happened to Portugal, ought to be in the starting 11? What are your expectations for Leão in Qatar?
If we're going to be honest, I don't have expectations for a single player in this World Cup. I'm so confused by it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, legitimately, I don't know. It feels like a cop-out, because people keep asking me, and I'm like, this is so unprecedented on, like, every part of the scale of it, and I don't know.
No, it's fair. I mean, timing, weather, the fact that we've had essentially really ridiculously packed fixture schedules over the last couple of years. You're absolutely right. I'm hoping, my expectation is that, or my hope is that we get more healthy players back out of this than could possibly be the worst case scenario.
A November World Cup is disruptive for the leagues that get disrupted. It's not necessarily disruptive for the tournament in and of itself. Like, once it starts, this is the World Cup. This is the most important thing going on in the lives of every one of these players. And you could actually make the case that now the players are in mid-season form and not, despite the condensed schedule, not as knackered as they would be if it were, you know, June after a full season of play with everything that entails. So I think from that perspective, the performance of the players themselves ought to be really high for a World Cup that comes in the middle of the season, as opposed to one that comes at the end of the campaign.
What do you think, Matteo? Are they coming in high on this, or Leão coming in high in this World Cup?
I think for him, when he's at his best, he's absolutely world class. We have seen some inconsistencies sneak in, though, this season in particular, where he doesn't ever have a 6 out of 10 game. He's either at an 8 or a 4. It's kind of the strange thing with Leão. You know, having watched every minute that he's played, it took him a long time to get going, but he doesn't have a middle ground. Like, he's either destructively bad or world class. So hopefully we get the latter more in this World Cup, just because he's such a joy to watch when everything's working out and he's in that flow state where everything just seems to happen for him so effortlessly. He is one of the most effortless players that I've ever watched, where it never looks like he's putting in a shift. It never looks like he's trying hard. He just instantly moves so much quicker and silkier than everyone around him. So I will be following teams like Portugal just to see some of the players that we like the most. I wish Georgia was in the World Cup, because I'd have Kvara. He's my favorite player right now in the world. There's no one that I like watching more than Kvaratskhelia. So hopefully one day you can guide them to a major tournament, because I will be all aboard that train. Right now, Kvara's my guy. You all know that, though.
It was the Ketelari at the start of the season.
Yeah.
Damn.
He got called up by Belgium.
Jay's right? Going in.
Oh, they really liked his side passes to the guy 2 yards away, I guess, in the limited cameos that he's made.
Marco, you had something to say. I cut you off. Let's have you have the last word.
Yeah, for me, the guy that I'm thinking about that I really think is going to break out is Milinkovic-Savic. I feel like he's an unbelievable midfielder. We've seen him in Italy for a couple of years now. That Serbia team, when I look at them on paper, I think they're unbelievable. Between him and Dusan Vlahovic, I think that they have like so much talent that a lot of the world has not necessarily seen yet. So those are two players that I see. Of course, Lau, I don't know how much he's going to play, but I feel pretty confident on the two Serbian guys.
I think irrespective of how Serbia fare in this tournament, they will probably be one of the more fun teams to watch, for sure. All in.
They are probably a Serie A dream. Serbia has 11 Serie A players representing six different clubs, so definitely one that you should watch, just so you're up to date when we get started in January 4th with the resumption of the Serie A. That's probably a good time to say.
Yeah,
goodbye.
That's a good spot to end for this week. Thank you so much for all of your energy and insight today, Matteo. You, as always, are a gem.
Are you not thanking the other two? So thank you, Christine. I'm glad I stood out in your eyes.
Sheesh. Aaron West, probably the funniest, if I'm giving out like mid-season awards here today.
Marco was balanced and fair today. He was like a politician.
Marco is very
diplomatic answers from Marco.
He's
no
very wise, this man. Who's trained him? And of course, Dre, the most organized, dulcet-toned of us. And I'm just the lead clown around here. Thanks for listening in this week. As always, hit that P+. Stay tuned. Ciao for now from all of us at Calcio e Cappuccino. Ciao.
See you guys.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What about when your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount+.